Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My colleagues and I are delighted to be with you. As always, we are in our favorite place, the Gann Chapel, and it is today, Wednesday, January the 17th, that we are taping for this coming Shabbat. Today, I am so excited about our content because we're talking about something that we have never, ever talked about before, trees, T-R-E-E-S. What do trees, stories about trees, teach us about us? And the reason for this content is that next Wednesday night and Thursday are the holiday of Tu B'Shvat, which is the Jewish New Year for trees. It's the dead of the winter. If you look outside your window right now, you will see that the trees are barren. They are spare. There are no leaves on the trees. You will see ice. You will see snow on the trees. You will see ice. You will see snow on the sidewalk. And it's just then in the middle of winter, in the dead of winter, that we, the Jewish people, have a holiday about trees. And we're going to look at, depending on how the conversation goes, two stories or maybe three about trees. And it is rich and it is generative and it tells us a lot about us. So, without further ado, let's thank God for the gift of learning Torah together. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu la'asok b'divrei Torah. Va'arevna Adonai Eloheinu et divrei Toratcha b'fiyu v'fi amcha b'Yisrael. V'nihya anachnu b'tzatzeinu b'tzatzei amcha b'Yisrael. Kulanu yodei shemecha v'lomdei Toratecha lishma. Baruch atah Adonai HaMelamed Torah L'Amo Yisrael. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Asher Bachar Banu Mikol Ha'amim V'Natan Lanu Et Torato. Baruch atah Adonai Notein HaTorah. So I want to start off by examining two stories about trees that are really antithetical to one another. They're just literally the opposite. One is ancient, one is relatively modern. The ancient one is from the Talmud, from the Tractate Ta'anit. The modern one is from Shel Silverstein in the year 1964. And without further ado, what I want to do first is read this brief Talmud story and just ask you, as you hear this story, what comes up for you? What is this brief story about? It's from the Tractate Ta'anit. This is, by the way, if you're at home watching, this is pages 1 and 2 of your handout. Brief story, famous story, by the way. This is a famous tree story from Ta'anit in the Talmud. When Rabbi Yitzchak and Rav Nachman were about to take their leave from one another, Rav Nachman asked of Rabbi Yitzchak, "May the master bless me." Rav Yitzchak said to him, "I'll tell you a parable. To what may this be compared? To a man who was traveling in the desert, and he was hungry, tired, and thirsty. Then he came upon a tree whose fruits were sweet, and its shade was pleasant, and a stream of water was flowing beneath it. He ate of its fruits, drank of its water, sat in its shade. When he sought to leave, he said, 'Ilan, Ilan, bameh Avarchecha, tree, O tree, how shall I ever bless you? Shall I say to you that your fruits will be sweet? Why, your fruits are already sweet. Shall I say that your shade shall be pleasant? Why, your shade is already pleasant. Shall I say a stream of water will flow beneath you? Well, a stream of water already flows beneath you. Therefore, this is my blessing. May it be the will of God that all the shoots planted from you will be like you.'" Rabbi Yitzchak concludes his remarks to Rav Nachman. "You too, Rav Nachman, with what shall I bless you? Shall I bless you with the knowledge of Torah? Well, you already have a lot of knowledge of Torah. With wealth? Well, you're already extremely wealthy. With children? You already have the blessing of children. Therefore, this is my blessing. Yehi ratzon chihiyu tza'atza'e me'echa kamotacha. May it be the will of God that your offspring will be like you." So, colleagues, what is this story about? And what comes up for you in this famous tree story?
Well, I want to start. I want to think about you know, the metaphor that the Torah is Eitz Chaim Hi. The Torah is a tree of life. And so this comparison is comparing these two famous rabbis to trees, as that they give us life, they give us sustenance, they give us Torah teaching, a model of living. So I think that's part of it. The other thing that's really interesting is the, you know, the Hebrew text, the Yehi Ratzon. In the Sephardic tradition, there's a Rosh Hashanah Seder, which is based on the words Yehi Ratzon. And then it, the Tu B'Shvat Seder, which is coming up, put in a plug for that. There's already 30 people signed up. The Tu B'Shvat Seder is modeled on the very early Rosh Hashanah Seder. So it's just an interesting comparison that we find order, we find life, we find teaching, and we find sustenance through the metaphor of trees.
Mm. Thank you.
Yeah, to me, two things come to mind. The first one is when it's talking about the trees is the phrase of Heschel, radical amazement. This idea that something that it's there and perhaps we don't appreciate it always, when, you know, it could do miracles for us and we just need to look around and find it. Mm. And so this is such a beautiful thing. And then the second part is, I don't know, it's amazing. It's really amazing. It's the best blessing you can ever get. Somebody blesses you like that, not only by giving you a blessing, but also praising you at the beginning with all the things that you already have. So it's a double blessing. It's, you know, bringing up all the attributes you have and saying, we hope your kids, you know, eventually will be like you. It's, wow, what else can you ask in life? Mm.
Michelle and Aliza, thank you, Dan and Elias. What comes up for you when you guys encounter this parable?
I love this parable so much that, you know, when your kids go to Jewish day school, you're required to inscribe multiple books to them each year. And, you know, one of the first stories that I put into one of my children's prayer books when they received it was this blessing, that they should aspire to live a life that their children, their children's children, their children's children, midor lador, from generation to generation, should bloom, should have. I mean, look, this is not just a blessing of the things that the tree did, right? You know, the tree is also blessed to be planted in the right place, in the right time. The learning that Rav Nachman has attributed is his. The wealth may be not necessarily entirely something he did on his own, but a condition of his blessing that he received in the world. And the idea that may you have both the things that you work for and the conditions, the right conditions to be able to bloom and thrive and inspire others, I think is just, I mean, I don't know, what are you looking for, Wes? it's a great blessing.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what I'm looking for, and Aliza, I'm so interested in your comments, which is I'm wondering, what is this story about? Like, what's at the bottom of this story? I mean, the tree parable is lovely, and the sage is lovely, but to me, I just want to slow down and double click at a couple of points in the story, and they'll get at what I'm looking at. The first is, you have these two rabbis who are together, and before they leave, one says to the other, will you bless me? And how cool is that? And what kind of a mindset do you have to be in that's the nature of your relationship, that you live in a world of such deep connection, a relationship, that when you see somebody you haven't seen, or maybe somebody you do see, that you don't just say, you know, ciao, or, you know, whatever, catch you later, maybe we'll do lunch one day, right? But that you ask the other for a blessing. And what kind of soul and heart go with that? And what kind of daily inner life goes with that? And can you do that if you don't do that? If you're the kind of person who doesn't do that, might you be open to doing that, and could you evolve to be able to do that? And what would that look like for your inner life and your outer life if you did do that? That is the kind of way that you rolled with people before you leave. Could you bless me? But the other thing that's so cool to me about this is that the thirsty traveler, to me, this is the key line. The key line is what actually doesn't even happen. It is this hungry, thirsty traveler eats and drinks and rests. And instead of burping, belching, and going, this thirsty traveler stops and says, and the impulse comes from within. It comes from within his own soul. Nobody asks him. The tree isn't actually, you know, an animate person who says, hey, what about me? The impulse comes from him. And he says, Ilan, Ilan, Bame Avorchecha, tree, O tree, with what shall I bless you? And what would it look like if we could roll through life with that kind of deep blessing? And when we can see blessing and when we can offer blessings, right, of course, the rich irony is that we fill our own lives with blessing. Liz, I haven't heard from you, but what do we learn from how we can be like this thirsty traveler?
I really love your read. It's deeply beautiful and deeply meaningful. And it's funny, I both love this story, and it also, there's an element for me that's so interesting, because this traveler sees the tree, but sees everything that the tree does on the exterior and doesn't have an ability to communicate what that tree is in her life. And I have the question of, you know, what is Rav Nachman asking about? What are they talking about? What's the place of pain in his soul? Is it just that he's like, this is his practice of gratitude and he always says goodbye in this way? Mm. Or is there a particular thing that he's struggling with? And does this blessing hear him? And it makes me realize there are so many ways in which we see the fruits of people's labor in the world, the exterior, the reality of what they create in the world, and we don't see the inner life. And so much of how we relate to people is what's visible on the outside and not necessarily what's on the inside. And there's this interesting paradox of these two, you know, everything that he sees is something from the outside but not from his inner world. So it's both gorgeous and meaningful and beautiful. And also I have this question about, you know, how is his heart at the end of that? Does he feel seen? And do we, you know, is that blessing sufficient?
Let me see if I'm understanding your comment. The rabbi who is the blessee, mm-hmm. not the blesser, but the blessee, at least according to the blesser, already has a ton of money, already has a ton of kids, already has reputation, would seem to be, you know, at the top of his game, right? And the blessee asks for the blessing from the blesser. And what I think I hear you saying, but tell me if I heard you right, is isn't it interesting that maybe the blessee, like, why does the blessee ask the blessor for the blessing? Because maybe the blessee, despite the, you know, the money and the wealth and the reputation of the kids, maybe the blessee is carrying around some inner pain, and the blessee actually wants a blessing because I'm in pain and I'm in maybe even anguish and I need some help. And that there could be a disconnect between the interior life, which could be in pain and broken, and the exterior life, which seems like this guy's got it going on. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly. And we don't know. We don't know what his, but we don't, you know, what prompts this question?
Like, why would the question, why the question from him, can you bless
right, me? And were they walking along the river, having a conversation about everything that's challenging his life? Were they, like, this is a question that I have because the markers of goodness in his life are all exterior. Yeah.
I don't know. I cannot see what you guys are seeing. I got
that's
stuck.
Why we have the class. If we all stuck, sound the same way, there's
I
no
got
reason
stuck
for the class.
More about in the beauty of the tree and the parable and this idea that you say that there are some people like that who just don't burp and go away, you know. And one funny vignette, we always have this problem with my wife, that in the family room of our house, I have all big speakers and subwoofers and everything because I love sound and music. But she sees the same place as a place to put plants and flowers, all right? So sometimes she puts a beautiful plant and a beautiful flower on top of one of my speakers, and I get so upset. And she says, why can't you appreciate the beauty of this? Look at these plants, how beautiful they are. Aren't they amazing? I said, no, I want my sound, you know? So yeah. There are people who think like that. And they are able, I mean, all of us at some point in different ways are able to appreciate beauty for the sake of beauty and what right. that brings us.
I would add also, you know, the 2 millennia ago, people in general were much more connected to the natural world than we are now.
Yeah. So I want to pivot from the energy of this story, which to me is somehow about, and by the way, so we're doing this, it's winter. We're doing this, it's 100 plus days during the war. And we're doing this when there's just a lot of heaviness in the world. And to me, also ultimately what this story is about is, how can you roll through life with a positive energy orientation, despite it all, despite it's 100 days of war, despite the fact that our 2 senators voted against Israel, which is its own horrific situation. Right, Markey and Warren both voted to hate on Israel, which I hate, and they're my senators. Like, so much negative energy, plus it's winter, plus. How do you, with all that, roll through life with positive energy, where you are seeing blessings and also bequeathing blessings and also creating blessings? That to me is what this story is about. So I want to pivot from that story's energy to Shel Silverstein's story, The Giving Tree. And I just have a question. Have any, I'm blessed here to sit with 4 parents. Did any of you guys ever read this story to your kids?
Yes.
Did you?
Of course.
Well, to me, this sounds like our kids.
Okay. It sounds like our kids. So Elias, with that, would you read The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein?
Can I have a special request? You are so theatrical when you read. Can you do that for us? Do you mind if I ask Aliza to do it? She's so good with it.
Okay. Aliza, if you'll read The Giving Tree, I think the request was theatrically.
Once there was a tree, and she loved a little boy. And every day the boy would come, and he would gather her leaves and make them into crowns and play king of the forest. He would climb up her trunk and swing from her branches and eat apples. And they would play hide and go seek. And when he was tired, he would sleep in her shade. And the boy loved the tree very much. And the tree was happy. But time went by and the boy grew older. And the tree was often alone. Then one day the boy came to the tree and the tree said, "Come, boy, come and climb up my trunk and swing from my branches and eat apples and play in my shade and be happy." "I am too big to climb and play," said the boy. "I want to buy things and have fun. I want some money." "Sorry," said the tree, "but I have no money. I have only leaves and apples. Take my apples, boy, and sell them in the city. Then you will have money and you will be happy." And so the boy climbed up the tree and gathered her apples and carried them away. And the tree was happy. But the boy stayed away for a long time. And the tree was sad. Then one day the boy came back. And the tree shook with joy. And she said, "Come, boy, come climb up my trunk and swing from my branches and be happy." "I am too busy to climb trees," said the boy. "I want a house to keep me warm," he said. "I want a wife and I want children, so I need a house. Can you give me a house?" "I have no house," said the tree. "The forest is my house, but you may cut off my branches and build a house. Then you will be happy." And so the boy cut off her branches and carried them away to build his house. And the tree was happy. But the boy stayed away for a long time. And when he came back, the tree was so happy she could hardly speak. "Come, boy," she whispered, "come and play." "I am too old and sad to play," said the boy. "I want a boat that will take me far away from here. Can you give me a boat?" "Cut down my trunk and make a boat," said the tree. "Then you can sail away and be happy." And so the boy cut down her trunk and made a boat and sailed away. And the tree was happy. But not really. And after a long time, the boy came back again. I am sorry, boy, said the tree, but I have nothing left to give you. My apples are gone. My teeth are too weak for apples, said the boy. My branches are gone, said the tree. You cannot swing on them. I'm too old to swing on branches, said the boy. My trunk is gone, said the tree. You cannot climb. I'm too tired to climb, said the boy. I'm sorry, sighed the tree. I wish that I could give you something, but I have nothing left. I am just an old stump. I am sorry. I don't need very much now, said the boy. Just a quiet place to sit and rest. I am very tired. Well, said the tree, straightening herself up as much as she could. Well, an old stump is good for sitting and resting. Come, boy, sit down. Sit down and rest. And the boy did, and the tree was happy.
Wow. So that story by Shel Silverstein, thank you for the read, written in 1964. You know, five parents in this group, all five of us have read this story to our kids. Four have and one will read. What is this story about? What is this story about? And I guess, let me just go around. What is the story about? And do you like this story? Or would you pick a different verb to describe your reaction? Like, do you hate the story?
So, against all of my better instincts, I love this story.
You love this story.
I do. I love this story because it is about unconditional love, right? Now, my sister sent me a version, and I wish I had looked it up before I actually got into this room, but by Shabbos, for your Shabbos class, I'll get it for you. It's a rewrite where somebody talks about the tree who has good boundaries. And it's rewritten with a much more healthy psychological psychological interaction between the tree and the boy, which teaches the boy to grow up and respect the giver and not just be the recipient.
You love this story.
I do.
Can I just say, I mean, you're entitled. I hate the story. Actually, I would use a stronger word like despise or loathe or spurn. I hate this story. So let me just ask you this question. Would you want your children to marry a partner who treats your child the way this boy treats this tree?
See, I think you could see this as a parable of partnership, but I much more see it in kind of the mode of the story. Do you know that story, I Love You Forever, which is a tough one? I love you for always, you'll always be my baby. This is a cautionary tale story. It's not only just a lovely story of the unconditional love of the tree. It also is teaching us, by the end, you get that actually the tree has given so much, and maybe the boy could have treated the tree a little bit better along. And if you're the boy, if you're the little one reading this story, maybe you learn to treat the others in your life, particularly your parents, your grandparents, with a little bit more love, a little bit more generosity.
So Michelle, before we hear our other colleagues, why do you say it's a lovely story? Here's my read, and tell me where I'm off. This is a story about one who takes and takes and takes and takes.
For sure.
And one who gives and gives and gives and gives. And the tree in the end, and the one who takes, takes and takes and takes without particular gratitude.
And never learns.
And never learns, just as a careerist, long-term taker. There's no evolution or deepening or growing. And the one who gives, gives to their own detriment until there's literally nothing left to give until they're a stump. To me, this is, I don't use this word very often, but it's an abusive story. This is a story about an abusive child and an abused parent. This is a story about abuse. This is a story about a child abusing a parent. Why isn't this a loathsome, horrific story?
So, I mean, it's been on the bestseller list forever.
I understand.
So just
I understand. So answer my question. Why isn't it a loathsome, horrific story?
There are two parts of this, right? One is I do think as Elias said, you know, this sounds like all of our kids sometimes. It also sounds like all of our parents. In sometimes if you're blessed to have a parent who is willing to sacrifice themselves in some way in order to help you become the you that you need to be, then this story resonates. And the key piece is that I don't think you're meant to close the book and say, oh, that's how I should be. I think you're meant to close the book and have a new appreciation and look around you and try to be a little bit more like the Talmudic story to say, wait, that tree was so amazing. That parent, that grandparent was so amazing the whole time. I don't want to be the one sitting on the stump at the end of the day. I want to do better for the ones I love who are showing me unconditional love.
You're saying the shot of the story is it's a cautionary tale of what not to be.
Well, I think that's not the only shot of the story, but I think the shot of the story is that that unconditional love is unconditional. Right. And when you meet it, you can be like that boy. Right. Or you can be like the rabbis of the Talmudic story. I know who I would want to be in response to that type of love that's offered.
Okay. Colleagues, other views and voices on this story.
To me, there are two things here. First is the, yes, you can say unconditional love. You can say that the beautiful phrase that you always say is that you are as happy as your least happy child. Right? Clearly, the boy is not a happy person. He doesn't have anything, and he's always coming back to ask for more things.
Right. By the way, let's double click on that point. Why is the boy sad? I mean, and the Shel Silverstein says the boy was sad. Why is the boy sad?
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Yes. So years ago, I was watching TV, and there was a famous Argentinian soccer player who left Argentina and played his whole life in Italy, made billions of dollars. All right.
That's very messy or not messy?
No, another player.
Okay.
Another player. Gabriel Batistuta, but it doesn't matter. Anyways, okay. So in the interview, he says, you have children, Gabriel. Right. He says, they are teenagers. What do? They study and work. And everybody says, what do you mean they work? You're a billionaire. Why do they need to work? Because I want to teach them the value of money and making money on their own so they will appreciate. Because if I give them everything, they will be very spoiled. So this is also a learning from here, is that we, as parents, we always try our kids to be happy and we will give them everything, but the best tool we can give them is the tools for them to be able to produce their own goods.
Wow, okay, lovely. Mr. Nesson.
Well, I was originally with Michelle about loving the story, but then the rest of the conversation took a turn that I wasn't a little surprised about. But I shouldn't have been, because yes, obviously the it is about a not balanced relationship, I think, you know, it is a bit of Torah, as you say. It really is about trying to create a balance of a relationship where. When we read it from the boy's perspective, he just keeps going back and getting more and more and more and more. And the unconditional, you know, love, the tree, the parent, just keeps giving more and more and more. And that doesn't create a good life balance. I think that's partially what creates the sadness in the boy.
Yeah.
And the fact that he keeps leaving.
Yeah.
Leaving and coming back. So he's not rooted like the tree.
There, what I'm hearing in your parish here is that the boy and the tree are stuck in a bad vibe, in a bad energy, which serves neither of them. Because in the crucial penultimate paragraph, you know, the tree says, come boy, she whispered, come and play. And he says, I am too old and sad to play. Right? So the boy's self-definition is, I'm sad, I'm broken. And then at the very end, and the tree was happy, ... but not really. Mm-hmm. You know, it says that the boy cut down her trunk and made a boat, sailed away, the tree was happy, ... but not really. So the tree is not happy. The boy is not happy. And I think treating each other in this kind of abusive way, happiness and abuse are a null set. And I think that's one of the things that comes out of this story.
So that's what I love about this story, is that it's a parable asking us the question, how are we going to treat each other?
Right. Elisa Berger.
Yeah, how is Heather and all these?
So there are very few children's books that I will not read, but this is one that will not be a bedtime story in our household because I have hated it for a very long time. I like
you've hated it for a long time.
A very long time.
We
yes.
agree on something.
We totally agree.
It's amazing. For the first time in 9 years, we agree on something. Say more, please. I'm thinking you're very wise now. What? Why? Why do you hate it?
I hate the materialistic quality of the boy. I hate the tree who has no character of her own, whose only mission in life is to make the boy happy, who's in this relationship with someone who will never be happy because he's only ever after his own sadness and she's only after her own happiness, and neither can meet. I hate that the tree gives up every part of herself and loses herself in the process. I hate that the boy takes everything. I hate that he never learns about how to be happy. And I hate that in the end, the tree is like this sad, dead stump of a tree, but happy because the boy's back and he's still sad. It's just, it's depressing.
So, yes. So now, why is this stupid, horrible, horrific, loathsome story a bestseller? Why did Elias and Dan and Michelle and I plead guilty, me, read this horrific tale to our kids? Since 1964, parents have been reading this story. I think every syllable you said is true. Then answer the question, why? Why is it so popular for the last 50 years?
We do a lot of things that are not good for us. No, I think Michelle's read I really appreciate, which is that this is a book, you have books that teach you what to do and books that teach you what not to do. And I think that this book in an educational, in a classroom setting where you can do an essay about it, where a teacher could go through and say, you know, is this a sweet children's story or is this a horror? Like, write an essay about what you find in the story and explicate it. I think that could be a very useful exercise. I think when you're aware of it, it's great, but I think it's actually the way that we absorb stories as little children absorb stories, they're not critically thinking about it, and that's where I think it can be harmful. And I think as parents, it's helpful for us. We find meaning in it. We find this lesson that we're thinking that our kids are going to adopt. And I think it takes a lot of cognitive ability that most kids don't have at the age we read it.
Except for, I mean, all of Shel Silverstein's books are in this mode. They're a cautionary tale that is inside of something that on the surface looks shiny and bright. I mean, if you read his poetry, you know, I will not go to school today, I won't. And, you know, he imagines, you know, many, many characters who don't behave in ways that we would call optimal. And right. yet he's teaching us something through that story.
So let me ask you on that point, Michelle, when you step back at these two stories, the parable from Ta'anit about the thirsty traveler and Ilan, Ilan, Bameh Avarchecha, tree, O tree, with what shall I bless you? That mode, and then the Shel Silverstein story. What's the relationship between these two tree stories? How do they interpret and bounce off of one another?
Well, I think it's really, in juxtaposition, it's quite interesting because the first story is both about, right, the tree has given something, but the blessing for the tree is that it should continue to be able to fulfill its function, that it should have all of its limbs and all of its fruits, that it should continue to live its life fully and inspire others to live their lives fully and be able to give in an appropriate, balanced way. And similarly for the Torah scholar, that he should continue to do his life's work and do it in a meaningful way and have others that are able to do that. Versus this, the blessing is, you know, if we were going to write this, you know, boy, give me a blessing, says the tree. It would be, may you always be willing to sacrifice every part of yourself for those that you love and be satisfied with nothing.
Well, yeah. I find that so interesting because I was just reading a book that was talking about love and the question about how do you describe and define love? And so many people describe and define love by what you do for me. Right? It's what do I love about you? Well, I love about you what you do for me. And the question, of course, is there such a thing where somebody finds the kind of love that you have in the Talmud,
right,
where, you know, yes, it's about, you know, he's also praising what the tree did for him, not finding necessarily something intrinsic about the tree, and yet able to kind of move beyond that it's only about me.
So here's my question. Can you grow? Can we grow? How do we help ourselves grow? How do we help the folks in our community grow? Let's say you're in the mode of the Shel Silverstein story, and that's how you relate. Because you're primal, you're about me, me, me. What do you think about me? Can we talk about me? And you're that character. Is there some way you can go from that person to the thirsty traveler in the Talmudic parable, where the way you roll is, Ilan, Ilan, Bame Avarchecha, O tree, O tree, I'm so grateful to you. How can I bless you? Is there, like, do you have to be born that way to be like the thirsty, grateful traveler? Or can you make yourself that way? And if so, what's the curriculum? How do we become that grateful traveler?
To me, it's more what I said earlier. It's not about what the tree provides to us. It's how content are we with our own lives, and if that enables us to see the beauty around us and be grateful.
So, but yes.
There's also technology, and I think, Dan, I'm so grateful to you for running the Tu B'Shvat Seder, because so much of that Seder is about being present and awakening our senses and noticing things that, you know, we largely, how often do you have a piece of fruit and don't even think about the tree that it comes from or who grew it or how often do you sit down for a meal unconsciously because you're doing some work or typing at the computer, right? So the action of the Tu B'Shvat Seder is to call us into the present moment and to awaken our senses and to awaken our sense of gratitude. And all of the moments really of Jewish traditional practice are about moving us from me, 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 me to our community, our need, blessing. And when we do those actions, there's wisdom to the fact that it's the first thing you get up in the morning. You don't start with like, I got to do my day. You start with Moda Eni, thank you, God, for bringing me back into this body and giving me the capacity. And you don't go right into breakfast. You have some prayers to say before you get there to give gratitude and acknowledge what is. And so I think the action that we can take is investing ourselves more deeply in our spiritual practice that then enables us to be a beacon of gratitude in the world.
Yeah, and that is a message that we need all days. And especially now. And just to close, I was thinking in this conversation of the evocative phrase of Max Kedushin, who is a 20th century theologian, who calls the kinds of blessings you're talking about and the kind of move of the thirsty traveler ordinary mysticism. Usually think of mysticism, you have to be some really holy moly person living on a resort, not talking to people, and you know that your whole life is focused on God and like you're in a convent or something. And Max Kedushin says, no, Judaism makes possible ordinary mysticism. We're in the middle of a busy day or in the middle of a hot desert when you're tired and thirsty, and right, that something about our tradition invites you to get beyond the screen or get beyond your routine and to realize that there are blessings all around if only we can see them. And so, Dan, thank you for next Wednesday night doing a Tu B'Shvat Seder from 6:30 to 7:30. Please sign up and do it. It's going to be there. Dan's going to be there. I'm going to be there. I could use the uplift. And may Tu B'Shvat inspire us all to see, to be, and to radiate out blessings in the world.
Amen.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.